Many people have braved the weather today. There's the famous story of Jesus saying, "Peace be still," when there was a storm at sea, and the storm vanished. But the point is, he was not telling the storm to be still. He was telling the people with him to be still, which basically means that in our lives, the storm, which is the thinking mind, when that is calmed down, quietened, then there's a potential for transformation, for listening to the voice of God. Otherwise, we are listening to our own voice all the time, 24/7. Our voice, which is heavily biased, prejudiced, because we are always wanting to defend and protect ourselves. The ego thinks it can think its way through problems to find solutions. The ego thinks it can think and analyze its way through a situation to find the solution. But actually, it is the dropping away of that incessant thinking and turmoil which allows a solution to present itself. And life will give us enough situations, so-called problems, to think about. One problem today, another problem 3 days later. Is someone's phone ringing? You can just switch it off. Which means that all through one's life, one will keep trying to solve problems, because life is about problems. Or all situations are seen as they are without reactivity, and then a response arises. Which basically means that the grip the problem had on me, it no longer has. It gets dissolved in the light of understanding. So life is no longer now a problem to be solved. Every time I find I've passed a comment against someone, a judgment, a criticism, no matter how small it may be, "Oh, this person said this, it reveals so and so about him." We forget that that is based on our conditioning, which makes us see that person's action a certain way. But we assume that is the truth. So we say something, could be what we think is not a harmful comment, escapes from our lips because we have forgotten. We too are conditioned beings. "No, no, what I know is right. I know this is my way, is the right way. This is the truth." Then we are setting ourselves up for big trouble. So the spiritual journey is a journey of courage, no doubt, because it is going to burn up all these preconceived notions and ideas and beliefs we've had about ourselves. When it allows us to see that no matter what the person in front of me is saying, no matter what, it is their point of view. I may not agree with it, but I cannot take away that right from the other, that it is their point of view based on their filters, their conditioning, which God created. Then I do what I think and feel I should do. But it is no longer the problem it was earlier. Supposing God gave us a gift where we could see over everyone's head the date of their last day on earth. In this room, suddenly you can see a date and a year. Now someone is going to live for another 20 years. Someone else may be alive for 2 months. Someone else 2 days. You can see that over everyone's head. Now, when you see, "Oh my God, this person has only 2 days to live," your natural instinct will be not to enter in conflict with such a person. You know they have limited time. Would you want to trouble them for 2 days? Would you want to be the source of trouble? Or would you feel that, "Oh gosh, this person has only 2 days on the planet. Let me not add to their misery." It is natural. It is called the felt oneness with being. The problem is we can't see this. We don't have that vision, but we know it. We know it that everyone in our lives has a timestamp. But because we take it for granted, our fights, our arguments, condemnation, ill will continues. So when all this nonsense is dropped, the nonsense of the thinking mind, I am left with my situation and I have to see how to deal with the situation. And I know all I can do is my best. The results are not in my control. Thy will be done. If I find I am not getting along with someone, repeatedly trying failed attempts all the time, perhaps the time has come to give up trying. But without any animosity, you did this to me. Who did what to whom? God did something to God, because we are all God's creations. But the ego personalizes it, because the ego forgets that nobody is apart from God. It takes it all very personally. When this taking things personally starts dying, that is the birth of true living, because now I am no longer obsessed with me as a person, trying to fight my way through situations, fighting with people, because if I'm fighting with situations, I'm fighting with God. God created the situations. If I'm fighting with people, I'm fighting with God. Then my mantra is to only fight, fight, fight through life. By all means, fight for what you think is right. But as Krishna says, you think you are doing it, whereas I, as time, have already killed them. The enlightened warrior is not fighting individuals as such. He is playing his role assigned to him. Would anyone like to share anything or ask something?
The quotation by Shakespeare says, "All the world's a stage, and we have our parts to play."
Can you just hold that for the recording?
His books, I think it is As You Like It, where it says, "The world is a stage, and we are all actors and playing our role with their exits and entries." I don't know what comes after that, but this quotation has always, you know, been going on in my mind.
But are you able to see that when you're dealing with people?
I'm not. No.
So if this quotation is going on in your mind, it means it has appealed to you at some level.
Yes.
So when that quotation is taken to heart, then one is living from that perspective. It is the ultimate statement. All the world is a stage and everyone is playing their role. Can we see that in our interactions with people during the course of the day?
Very rare. And then I just forget.
Yeah. So perhaps every evening one reviews what transpired in the day and where one forgot that everyone is playing their role. See, this is not a practice where you have to be hard on yourself. The teaching sinks in by and by on its own. What it needs is a remembrance. So as my teacher would say, that since this approach may be a bit radical or new compared with how you've lived your life earlier, at the end of the day, in the evening, just sit for 10-15 minutes and review what happened in the day. And then you see everyone was playing their role perfectly. And the realization starts dawning on its own. But that much contemplation really helps, because you see, we are hardwired into believing people are the doers of their actions, because that is how our conditioning has been. So it's not easy to overwrite that. It takes time. But little earnestness, little effort goes a long way.
Isn't it going to take a very long time?
Who knows? It could change things tomorrow. We won't know until we try. And that's all we can do. The results not in our hands. All we can do is try. That one day I'm sitting in the evening with my cup of coffee and I realize I met someone or spoke to someone today whom I really love. Role being played. And I met someone who was rude to me in a shop. Role being played. By and by, this becomes the new conditioning. And no matter what event has transpired in the day, when this realization comes in the evening, it brings with it a sense of peace. Event may have happened, I may have lost my perspective on some interaction, but when I review it, I say, my God, this person said it as per the role they played. I said what I had to as per my role being played. I'm not out of it. I'm part of it. And thereby, the peace starts coming in slowly, 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 gradually. Gradually is always better.
So there is no right or wrong.
Yes, ultimately there isn't. But that does not mean I am at the receiving end of wrong. It means there is no right or wrong because the person who's doing an action is right as far as they are concerned, but not as far as I'm concerned. So there's no right and wrong. Now I have to see, do I protect myself? Do I confront? Do I walk away? But because I've understood now, I'm not fighting a person separate from God. I'm more objective. The eye of wisdom is operating now. I'm dealing with the situation which has presented itself to me. I'm no longer dealing at the level of this individual who is troubling me. Earlier, I'm consumed by this. You did this to me. You abused me. You did this. You did that. Now it's my time to give back. This dialogue falls apart. It has no place anymore because nobody is the doer of the actions. But now being pragmatic, realizing where I find my peace, I have to deal with a particular person. So I deal with that person objectively because the data has dropped away. And I find I'm probably making more sensible decisions rather than knee-jerk reactions. That starts happening.
Can you give an example of what you would say to yourself? Or what
if someone abuses me in any way, I don't take delivery of it. But it doesn't mean I keep subjecting myself to that abuse. I may feel one day that I'd rather not interact with this person because the same dynamic is playing out all the time. We've tried discussing, we've tried reasoning it out, but how much to try? So in my heart, I wish that person well. I bless them for facing their challenges, which only God knows they will face, but I decide to stay away. So that decision to stay away is not a form of escapism anymore. It is, yes, understanding that nobody is the doer of their actions. So I will not carry this load of malice or hatred towards that person for having done things to me. The ego loves to carry that load. So that does not happen for the enlightened sage. But he still has to take a decision. He may feel that, you know, I can deal with this person no matter what. Then he deals with that person. He doesn't move away. That depends on his decision, what he feels like doing. But because this mother load has been dropped of doership, the sage in either case is at peace. So the sage will not force himself or herself to deal with the person. Not necessary. As long as internally it has been understood. That is the entire foundation of the Bhagavad Gita. But we miss this. It's all just theory to us. That is why my teacher called this living the life courageous. Living this takes courage. It's too easy to shut our doors on people. The courage is to realize, no matter what, they are not the doers of their actions. Now, it is not about slamming and shutting doors anymore. I just have to decide for my well-being, my own health, mental state, what decisions do I have to take? So I'm no longer obsessed with the other. It is me taking care of myself. And I may find myself telling this person, look, we don't get along. We've tried enough. Let's not suffer this relationship further. But if ever you are in trouble and you need my help, my doors are open for you. Very hard for the ego to do this. But if one reaches that stage, not necessary, if one reaches that stage, all right, a lot of problems have been happening between us, but in a time of need, if you feel I have something to offer you, I would welcome. That becomes a way of living. But if we part ways with people, but this is not sorted out, that nobody is the doer of their actions, that is indeed escapism. How many people are you going to escape from?
So is it forgiving?
You could say that, but this is a very interesting subject forgiveness. Because forgiveness is also a trap. I'll tell you how. Someone does something, I forgive this person. Why do I forgive this person? Because I know that they are not the doers of their actions. But the problem is, I forgive this person. I forgive you. You took away my inheritance, I forgive you. You troubled me for 6 years, I forgive you. It's okay. The ego has come in. So, yes, it is a first step rather than being unforgiving. No doubt. Rather than being unforgiving, it is the first step. I forgive you. But what is the next step? The next step is, who is to forgive whom? You are an instrument. The other person is an instrument. And you are proclaiming forgiveness. Leave it to God to forgive. That is why Jesus on the cross did not say, I forgive them for they know not what they do. He said, Lord, forgive them for they know not what they do. So this I forgive, we have to be very careful. It's very seductive. We've learned so much about forgiving people. But someone who's truly on the path will look at this. You know, my teacher pushed it to the extreme. He said, true forgiveness is forgiving yourself for wanting to forgive someone else for something they are supposed to have done. Because that you catch the ego. But when you start living this, who am I to forgive? It is God's job. I stop saying, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you for troubling me, I forgive you for taking my money. Forgiveness becomes irrelevant because it is now lived.
Does this have something to do with karma?
Well, you could say everything is to do with karma. If I can live this understanding, it is the end of karma as I know it. If I absolve everyone in my life from being the doers of their actions, the game is up, actually. Otherwise, if I continue assuming people are the doers of their actions, I perpetuate that karma, the action-reaction loop. Very simply, if I'm arguing with someone and I continue arguing, I'm perpetuating it. We are not seeing eye to eye. It's going on. I'm stuck to my ground. They are stuck to their ground. So the whole cycle of cause and effect is being perpetuated. That will keep going on. All these karmic streams will keep going on in all directions. Once the concept of doership has been understood, it drops. Because now my relationships are seen in a new light. That is where I have found my peace. Some relationships are destined to trouble you your entire life. Some are the opposite, to love you your entire life. But when we stop this compartmentalization, and we face each relationship not through the eyes of duality but the eye of singularity, when we have seen the one behind it all, that truly is the end of karma. That is when we go to sleep at night with a peaceful mind. Then what happens? The prarabdh karma, the stock I have come with, will play out. But because I'm not adding fuel to the fire like I used to do, I'm burning less. When I'm no longer crucifying people in my life for doing things or myself, I'm burning less. And I see more and more the divinity behind everyone. I lose sight of this one fact. All my relationships, whether it is with my bhajiwala, my sibling, my spouse, my colleague, all my relationships are a reflection of my relationship with myself. The ego mired in doership does not realize this. That is why it is busy pasting labels on people's foreheads. That is why Nisargadatta Maharaj, my guru's guru, said, be very careful when you come onto this path because it is really going to burn up all that you thought was precious. It burns up the false because all what you thought was precious is false. Imagine. Your troublemaker's in front of you and the realization comes, he's not the doer. You have nothing to hold on to. It's gone from your hands. Ego is scared. My God, without reacting, who will I be now? Because the ego is afraid to die.
Another thing bothers me. We all know, at least I think that we all know, that we are always afraid of the we all know that we are on different journeys. But our destination, of course, is going to be the same.
Yes.
So I want to know, how many of us can think that way? I mean, you know, the way I get this is, why does this thought keep coming to me? You know, that we are all on a different journey. And we reach the same destination anyway.
Yes.
So why do we have these, you know,
conflicts?
Yeah, conflicts.
Because that is the reason we are here, to learn that. Point is, am I doing my bit? Forget the others. My bit is, am I in conflict? That is why Maharaj told a social activist, you think it is the world that needs saving, but actually, it is the world that needs saving from you. Which means, am I seeing things daily through my interactions as far as I am concerned? And am I a beacon of peace or a beacon of conflict? That my attitude to life is in my hands. The rest is not. So if I'm, and you are absolutely right. Everyone in their hearts knows that the destination is the same. What is that destination? We are all going to die. But we assume we are going to live. You didn't announce today that Wayne would have told people to leave by now. We assume this. So many people are unconscious. They live their lives in ignorance. But they are few. God's chosen ones. As my teacher would say, Allah ke pyare. Where the seed is sown, hey, what is life really about? And thus was a spiritual seeker born. It's a gift to even have this thought, this simple thought, that why the conflict if everyone's going to reach the same destination is not yours. God has put it there. So that this individual has now the potential to explore life, explore the spiritual dimension, understand where are my troubles located, what all is going on in my mind. And this revelation starts happening. And it is truly a gift. That is why my teacher would say to anyone who walked into his living room, anyone, no matter how desperate, no matter how despondent, how dejected in life, that the fact that you have come here, please do consider your glass half full and not half empty. So far, the ego has been obsessed with the glass being half empty. Now the perspective changes. Why out of thousands upon thousands of people, only few are drawn to the spiritual path? Because they want to know what is this life about. They are not lost in the Maya. They are not lost in the material world. That is, it is truly, one has to be grateful to God that you have put me on this journey of discovery. And then with that comes trust. It is a journey of trust.
And one can see changes in them.
Yes.
You know, when at night, as you said, go through the day, and then you feel.
Then you know.
Yes. That.
What is your name?
Anita.
Anita. Anita. And what is your name?
Seema.
Seema. That is actually when we can see our reactions have changed to the same person, to the same situation, but now we are thinking differently about it. Then we know. Like you say, my God, 6 months ago, my thought process would have been that. Now it is this. That is the measuring stick. And what is being measured is my peace of mind. That is the only measure. So by and by, I find through the rough and tumble of daily living and relationships, I'm more and more at peace. Then I know for myself. I mean, what greater gift can God bestow upon you than Sukha Shanti? Because like covered everything. All relationships are included in this vision of one. Then I am healed from the illusion of separation. That realization that my reactions have changed, my thinking has changed, is a sign of the healing. The healing from the wound of assuming people to be the doers of their actions and from the separation. It's really, I don't know if there's a greater gift than that. But peace of mind is not seductive. It's not alluring. We tend to go towards all these things which capture us, give us experiences, because the ego loves that. Ego loves experiences. Peace of mind is not really an experience. So ego has ignored that all the time. Is death an experience? Is deep sleep an experience?
Can one catch oneself getting a thought and, you know, trying to push it out?
Could be. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was a practice which Sri Aurobindo adopted for 3 days. But for us common people, what we will find is thoughts may arise, but we are no longer involved in the thought in the duration of time. We are not creating stories and extending that thought. Because we are more in the witnessing state, thoughts come, thoughts are witnessed, thoughts go. So what does it mean as an example? Someone says something, a thought arises. But when I realize that the person is not the doer of the actions, maybe the story is no longer happening. He said this to me, blah, 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 is gone. So the involvement in the thoughts is called thinking. In horizontal time, in the duration of time, that starts lessening. So my mind is no longer full of the stories that it used to be full of. It is more and more vacant, more and more available, more and more receptive. That someone tells you something, hey, you know, I think what I'm going to tell you is good for you. Earlier, I don't need your advice. Now, all right, let me hear it out and let me contemplate on what you have to say. So that immediate defense mechanism is no longer operating because I have not created a story out of it. Normally, we shut ourselves out as far as certain people in our lives is concerned. Here, it's the field of potential. I may contemplate on what you've told me. I may still not agree with it, but now I've given myself the chance to really see what the other person is saying. So I'm no longer invested in stories daily like I used to be.
What happens is my observation is that a lot of people have invested in their misery. So the ego has no, actually ego is fallacious. It doesn't have a real bearing, a real existence. So existence comes only with negativity, with negative stories, so that we are relevant. Relevance comes in that. There's a very beautiful verse in the Gita in the Bhakti Yoga, which is all about emotional quotient. It says, Advaista sarva bhutana, maitra karuna evacha, nirmamoha nirankara, samadukha sukha same. So the bhakta who's totally focused on the Lord, for him, sukha, dukha, maitra, friendship, enmity, actually it is annihilated because he doesn't get seduced by somebody's good behavior or gets despondent with somebody's negativity, because basically his focus is on the permanent Lord, which is beyond that. Yes. And the Jagat Guru, Lord Krishna says, he calls himself Yogeshwari, Yoga Ishwar. I mean, yoga means unity and Ishwar is God. Now, when we unite ourselves in the unity of consciousness with everyone, that is the first step towards Yogeshwari. Being a Yogeshwari means being in that united state. And sorry, another Sufi thing came to my mind. If you know, when the Sufis say Fanafal Allah, they give the analogy of a moth going into fire and burning. So similarly, to completely extinguish your identity in God means to extinguish the ego, not the physical body or your physical existence, but the ego. Because the ego and the mind, they keep colluding all the time to create stories, to create negative connotation, and give relevance to our existence, that we stretch everything. Somebody was nasty to us because we interpret that action, because he must be having a grouse against us. Maybe somebody has told him something about us. So you know, the story keeps extending, and next time we meet him, we are so prejudiced. We can't see the thing that he was just in a bad mood and he behaved with just that action. The interpretation comes from us. So, you know, sorry, I'll just end with one Sufi, very beautiful Sufi saying, Ek khuda jis tujhe haal mein rakhenge, khush rahenge. Teri khushi mein khush, tera khidmat guzaru. Banda hu tera, tu mera parwardigar. Means complete acceptance of the condition you are in. And that is what I just wanted to.
And this whole teaching is this only, that how do I merge into that? The moth merging into the flame sounds very esoteric. I can't do it. I can't even conceive of it. But in my daily living, when I see in this manifest world, with the people I'm dealing with, that the hand of God is above it all, then the moth has gone into the flame.
The challenges keep coming, and the awareness has to keep coming along with the challenges. How to keep observing things in the true perspective and let go. Letting go, it's say, okay, somebody's nasty, somebody's consistently nasty, that's their blueprint. Because that's their blueprint is to trouble me. And my blueprint is not to get troubled. So that's...
Yes, somebody is nasty based on their conditioning, which we don't know. So they are playing their script perfectly. I am at the receiving end. Now I have to decide what to do. Do I walk away? Do I express myself, give it a chance? Or do I get aggressive? See, this teaching will never say what you should do and what you should not do. It will say, do precisely that which you think and feel you should do, knowing nobody is the doer of the actions.
You said something about peace, that peace is not seductive. You know, because stories are more seductive, but peace is so boring, you know, in that sense, or so insipid. But every religion we look at actually starts with peace, like Om Shanti, or a Shalom in the Judaism, or Salam in Islam, or even peace be upon you in Christianity. It's all about peace.
Which gets missed.
But we just don't, we run away from peace, you know, because it's...
That is why I say these teachings of Advaita will never be famous. Nobody wants peace. Nobody wants it. Few people here and there, like two here, five here. Others may be just coming to have an entertaining Sunday morning. I don't know. I'm just joking. What I mean is, you see, Nisargadatta Maharaj was quite right when he said, this is the teaching of the last resort. The people who come here, referring to his satsangs, they have been there, done that. What is the simplest? What are the simplest tenets of this teaching? Thy will be done. An acceptance of what is. Because it has already happened. If something happens in your life, someone says some beautiful words of love, or someone says words of hate, it's happened. So total acceptance of what is, then doing what you think and feel you should do. And the foundation of thy will be done is not, basically not my will, but thine. Not my will, not the other's will, but thy. So this is really someone who has tried various paths, gone down different roads, will realize that what the hell, how long am I going to keep doing this? If I just bring it back to my own daily living and all I have been looking for, whether I know it or not, is peace of mind. So that I can live the rest of my days in Sukha Shanti.
Problem is, Gautam, everybody follows a particular religion. This goes beyond religion. This is spirituality. This is it is true form and the purest form. But every religion, if you look at it, if people really read their scriptures, it's only talking about surrender, acceptance, because even in Christianity, when Jesus said, thy will be done, that famous statement, it was in the garden when he knew he's going to be crucified. He goes to the garden, he's sweating profusely, and he knows that they're going to come and take him. And he tells all his disciples, be ready with the swords and everything. He goes up, puts his head down and tells God, take this cup away from me. And suddenly he comes up feeling very refreshed, and he says, tells everybody, put their swords down. Because thy will be done, I'm accepting the fate because I'm going to be crucified. So it's then every religion, the acceptance factor, but it's never, and this is the purest teaching which has been, you know.
So isn't it absolutely crazy, the world we are in, and our own private worlds, absolutely crazy. We are looking for ways to trouble ourselves because then we know, at least I am the one being troubled. Now I know who I am. Trouble, trouble, trouble. That's because where he was on his journey, he said, there is no trouble in my world. Can you imagine saying that? There is no trouble in my world. There is this, I remember seeing this rat what do you call it? You know, these, there are these pads. No, not mouse traps. The sticking pads. And you know what the brand was called on Trouble Gum? It's those sticking pads you have to leave open for rats. And it was called Trouble Gum. We are always getting into these pads. All the time. Yes, Jimmy. One sec. Just the mic. Trouble Gum.
My little takeaway from this talk on trouble is do not trouble trouble, or trouble will trouble you.
Beautiful. Who has said this? You have said it. Fantastic. This is a Mahavakya. It's like I was talking to someone about fear, because she was saying how, you know, she's being told not to be fearful, don't be afraid. I said, look, why take that load? It is natural to be fearful. We are made that way. Why not accept that fear? Who has said, be brave, be strong? No, God hasn't made you that. Accept that fear, see it arising, and in spite of that, do what you think and feel you should do. Why fight? Even fighting emotions like fears, what is the reason to fight it? It's the same thing. Ego develops its identity again. The courageous one, in spite of their fears, they don't try to brush it aside. They don't try to subdue it. They still deal with it, deal with situations, find their way through. Some people are designed to be timid. Some people are designed to be aggressive. The aggressive one may not feel that much fear. The timid one may, but then the timid one has been told, oh, you must be like the aggressive one. That is where the problem comes. The problem comes when we do not accept our nature, how God has made us. There is no one size fits all. I remember someone a few years ago telling me they were having a problem with their brother on the inheritance. And this person who was talking to me had no children. He said, my brother was being totally unreasonable. What the parents had decided, how to share all the inheritance, but this brother wanted 80% of it. He said, now I ask myself, I don't have any kids. I lead a simple life. I have to decide whether that 20%, which should have been 50, is enough for me, or I need the balance. And he said, I decided that 20% is enough. And I know my nature is not to go to court. So I gave up the fight. So he honored what was in his nature. In a very rational way, saw the situation, saw his wants, needs, not this is my right, now I'm going to fight, because that was not his nature. Someone else's nature may be the opposite. Yes, I want to fight and I have it in me to fight for my rights. But now I know nobody is the doer of their actions. So even that fight is no longer personal. It is a fight for my rights. You know, there was this story of a lady. She was single. She was a very renowned tarot card reader. And she was a landlady. She had properties. And one of her tenants was a very powerful politician. Very powerful. He was refusing to vacate one of her apartments when he should have, as per the contract. Now, this lady had no support. No emotional support. She was on her own. She had a situation to deal with. So what she did is she said, I'll try my best. That's all I can do. The odds are completely stacked up against me. So she would do tarot card readings for herself to guide herself that what shall I say in court tomorrow? What shall I say day after? She and her tarot cards, no support. Timid by nature, but had a big problem on her hands. And she just did precisely that which she was trained in, that which she intuitively knew, went step by step by step and won the case. So she did what she could according to her nature. She didn't even hire a lawyer, I believe, knowing the results are not in my control. I cannot take on such a tenant. Impossible. Just worked with her inner guidance.
So those tarot cards were her inner guidance?
Yes. Tarot cards are inner guidance. our subconscious is projected onto the cards and it reflects back to us things we didn't see. So you see, the point is we need to honor our nature. The problem is when we try to become other than what we are. There's that song of, it's called Return to Innocence, which I heard in my in the 80s or 90s. I don't know if anyone's familiar with it. And one of the key lines is, don't be afraid to be weak. Don't be too proud to be strong. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you remember that song? Doesn't the chorus go, look into your heart, my friend, and that will be the return to yourself, the return to innocence. There's some cold coffee and sandwiches, I believe, for everyone. So do have some of that before you leave.
I must thank you all because you all have given me an opportunity to share, which I wouldn't be able to do if you all weren't here. So it has been my privilege. Just a very ancient message come down through thousands of years. Message has been the same, presents itself differently with each passing generation. That is all very ancient. There is one very beautiful Tibetan quotation I read from the Tibetan master, where he said, we have been waiting to meet, you and I. We have been waiting and waiting to meet, so that I may give you the message, just like I received the message. And it ends on, I am the messenger, and you must take the message.